Okay.
Okay, this is Craig Lubo, and thank you for joining us. I have Spook Candy here with me in the studio, and he is a folk musician who has appeared with Pete Seeger more than 50 times, and he is in the middle of doing a three-year Remembering Pete Seeger tour. Welcome, Spook.
Hey, Craig, how are you? It's great to be here.
Great. And so let me have you tell me what motivated you to do a tour relating to Pete Seeger.
Well, you know, I grew up in a very conservative household. Not necessarily politically conservative, although it was, but more so culturally conservative. And my mom tried. By the way, I grew up in Montclair, New Jersey. So, you know, it wasn't like I grew up in the woods or anything like that. But she tried to be open-minded, but she had this very deep inherent fear of the 1960s. In her attempt to try to be open-minded, she bought a record album called Peter, Paul, and Mary in Concert. And did I love that record album with Puff the Magic Dragon and If I Had a Hammer, Where Have All the Flowers Gone, and songs like that. But she also bought a second album, The Beatles, Hard Day's Night. And when John Lennon came out with that statement that the Beatles were more popular than Jesus, which was probably true, and he didn't mean it in a way to put down Jesus. Well, that was the end of contemporary music in my household, and that was the end of the experiment to try to assimilate to the changing world of the 1960s in my household, and that was the end of my exposure to music. So you fast forward to many years of college, I finally graduate, and I'm sitting across the table from a man who's interviewing me to work at Mutual Benefit Life Insurance Company as an actuary, and they're offering me a lot of money. And the guy says, so what do you think? And I said, well, you know, I bought this guitar last week. He said, oh, really? You play the guitar? I said, well, not yet, but I'm going to learn how to do that. Oh, okay. What kind of guitar? It was an old used Yamaha guitar I bought for $50. I said, oh, that's great. I said, yeah. And then the next day, a professional banjo player moves in downstairs, and he says he'll be willing to teach me anything I need to know on the guitar. So, oh, that's really interesting. Yeah, and then Friday, just 4 days ago, he said, what are you doing tonight? I need somebody to run the soundboard for my bluegrass band. I didn't know anything about running the sound, but he paid me $12 and took me out to the diner. And the interviewer is starting to get curious why I'm telling him this story. And I said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take an attempt to be a musician. And if that doesn't work, I'll come back and work for your insurance company. Well, I never went back to the insurance company. Here I am today. Years of playing open mics and all this stuff, I finally get a professional gig. And what songs do I play? Well, songs that I wrote, and Beatles songs from Hard Day's Night, and songs from Peter, Paul, and Mary. And what does the audience eat up? They eat up the Peter, Paul, and Mary songs. So I start doing more of that. The influence of that style of music found its way into my own writing style. And then some of my original songs found their way to Pete Seeger. Okay? It happened in 2003 because in the run-up to the invasion of Iraq, I started putting together some peace concerts. And one woman who was running one of the peace concerts that they brought me into play said, why don't you send your songs off to Pete Seeger? And I said, you know, I've heard of this guy. He's some old man. Wasn't he one of the Peter, Paul, and Mary guys? She said, no, that was Peter Yarrow. I'm talking about Pete Seeger. I said, well, didn't he write those children's songs? What was that? If I Had a Hammer, you know, and Where Have All the Flowers Gone? And she said, well, they're not really children's songs, but yes, that's him. And I said, well, if you want my songs to get to Pete Seeger, you can send it to him. Little did I know that that was a smart move. Well, it wasn't a smart move, but it was a fortuitous move, because it's always better to get someone else to toot your horn than for you to toot it yourself. And a couple weeks later, I get a letter from Pete Seeger. Basically, he says, Spook, I wonder if I can have permission to sing your song, Vote. And I was flabbergasted. Here's a man, I didn't think much of him, but I knew he was very famous. And he asked me, of all people. I later on realized that Pete was like that with everybody. He treated everybody as an equal. Well, 2 weeks later, I get in the mail, I get a copy of my the lyrics to my song Vote with all kinds of red lines drawn through them and question marks and suggestions for changes and stuff like that. And I said, whatever. And then I get a postcard in the mail. Spook, I hope you can come to the pumpkin festival. We can't pay you, but we can feed you pumpkin pie. I go to the festival, and knowing almost nothing at all about Pete, I ask someone to point him out. He's standing about 15 feet away from me. And I approach him, and I extend my hand, and I say, hi, I'm Spook Handy. Now, he knows who I am because he's written letters to me. And I expected him to shake my hand and say, hi, I'm Pete Seeger. But that's not what he did. He put his hands in his pockets, and he stooped down about 2 inches to my level, okay? I'm 6 feet tall. He was 6 foot two at the time. He's probably 6 foot three earlier in his life, but he was now 84 years old. And he looked me in the eye, deep into me, and he asked me a question. Do you know what Founder's disease is? Founder's disease. Now, I do know what Founder's disease is, but I said, you tell me, Pete. And Pete said, Founder's disease is when the same people who founded an organization 30 years ago are still running it today. And then he turned and walked away, and that was the entirety of our first conversation. While I stood there almost flabbergasted at what had just happened, I knew that when something comes into my life out of the blue, that there's a meaning for it. And I knew that what Pete was doing was he was kind of telling me why he invited me up to this festival, why he was bringing me into, and if you people know who Pete Seeger is, he was inviting me, as he invited hundreds of people before me and dozens of people after me, into the very center of the universe of folk music, standing right on stage next to Pete Seeger. Why? Because he hoped that this founder's disease of the old guard still running the institutions that were put together back in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, that they could be replaced or followed or, you know, sequenced by the next generation and the generation after that. He hoped that the tradition could be kept alive, the tradition of using songs as a tool to build and nurture communities.
And that was the whole essence of his musical career, was songs of social conscience.
I would agree with that. That was the essence of his whole musical career. I would agree with that. And I would say it's even greater than that. That was the essence of his whole life. Songs of social conscience was only one part of it, because what he really was looking for was something deeper than that. He was looking for people to participate in the fullness of the human experience. And that included standing up and fighting for what we believe in, but also included celebrating the good things that we have. And so he would sing songs, you know, with the children, I've been working on the railroad, and on top of Old Smokey, and Oh Susanna, and Goodnight Irene, which is not necessarily a children's song, but these are, you know, nice, fun, wholesome songs, as well as sing the songs that challenge people, that challenge the old guard, that challenge the leaders that are not necessarily leading us in the right direction. But more than anything, there was this overriding sentiment. And this is my perspective, because, you know, Pete was very special to everybody who knew him. And people see him in many different ways. The way that I saw him was that his overriding message is that we have all the tools we need to shape ourselves and our world into what we wish them to be. Now, for some of us, those tools are right here in our fingertips. For some of us, they're within arm's length. And yet, for some others, they're a little bit beyond arm's length, but they're still attainable if we all work together. This, I believe, is what Pete was about.
Back in the 50s, he was blacklisted by the House and American Activities Committee. What happened? Did he still produce music then? Was there anything out?
Let me tell you what happened with that. And there's so many different facets to that. I live in New Jersey, and I'm here recording this interview with you on the weekend of the International Folk Alliance Conference. Pete was an activist, and he was an activist not because they're mad at their parents or they're rebelling against society. That wasn't what Pete was doing. He wasn't an activist because he had a bone to pick. Pete was an activist because he loved America. He loved the ideals that America is built around. Now, you might have problems with what America is doing, America might be living up to only a faint shadow of the American ideal, but that ideal that all people are created equal, that we have these inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that ideal that we can self-govern without having some authoritarian king or prince tell us how to run our lives, or the church, through, and we could do that through representative government. That's what he loved. And he loved nature, and he loved the culture. And so he would sing about the mountains and the streams and the rivers, and he would sing about the dances and the food that people eat. And he would sing about the issues. He would sing about the Vietnam War. Now you talk about the 1950s. He would sing songs about labor rights, you know, and he would sing songs about civil rights. And he would sing songs that, if America did live up to the its ideal, would require change in this country. And there were people who resisted that change. This is how it was then. This is how it always was. So at that time, coming out of World War II, we were in the Cold War with the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union had the hammer and the sickle as their symbol. And they were allegedly, supposedly for the people, and allegedly, supposedly for the workers and the labor people. And Pete was for the people, and Pete was for the labor workers. And Pete, earlier in his life, was a member of the Communist Party, so he got blacklisted. Did they allow him to continue to sing? Well, sure, but no commercial radio or commercial television would touch him. He couldn't find concerts in any of the reputable places. He pretty much was just playing at summer camps and at schools for young kids, and maybe some of the more open-minded colleges. So the interesting thing about that was, here he goes off to the summer camps and the schools in the 1950s, and he's singing mostly songs about the landscape and the history and stuff like that. But a few songs that we should know about our, you know, about the issues we have. And 10 years later, those kids that were in grammar school listening to Pete singing in the 1950s were in the colleges in the 1960s. And they brought that kind of spirit that Pete had, and that became a big part of the civil rights movement and the anti-Vietnam War movement that went on in the 1960s.
What were some of the songs anti-war movement?
Okay, well, one of them, which is one of the songs that I recorded on my album, What You're Gonna Do, back in 2007, is a song called Waist Deep in the Big Muddy. This song is pretty amazing because he performed it. He finally, after being blacklisted, finally gets invited back onto commercial television. He gets invited onto a program called the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. And what does he do? He decides to sing four songs about the military history of the United States. I don't remember what they were, but a fourth song, a song that he wrote himself, if you were paying no attention whatsoever, you might think that it was about World War II, because the original words start off, it was back in 1942. I changed it to back to 1992. But if you paid any attention whatsoever to the lyrics, you would realize that that song was about the Vietnam War, and it was an anti-war song coming out in the middle of the Vietnam War at a time when no ever previously in history has anybody broadcast an anti-war song.
I believe another song is It's Your War Now, Mrs. Bly. What is that?
Well, that's a song I recorded also on my What You're Gonna Do album in 2007. That's a song that I wrote. And the thing about Pete and why he influenced me so much, and why I'm doing this Remembering Pete Seeger tour, was that you can sing his songs just the way that he wrote them. And I do a version of Where Have All the Flowers Gone that is a combination of how he sang it when he sang it solo, and how Peter, Paul, and Mary sang it when they sang it in harmony, and how Peter Yarrow sang it when he sang it solo. And it's, you know, pretty much a song that you've heard before in a style that you heard before. But you can also take his songs and change them around. We'll play one of the songs that I completely rearranged. And then sometimes there's a song that he writes and you just can't sing that particular song, but it influences you to write a new song. So this song is my version. Well, Waist Deep in the Big Muddy is Pete's version of a song about the Vietnam War. This was my response to something that the president said in 2005 about the invasion of Iraq, when he said somebody asked him if he had second thoughts about the Iraq war, if he thinks it was a mistake. And he said, we had a referendum on that. It was the 2004 presidential election, and the people spoke their minds. This is your war now. This is everybody's war. And I actually agreed with him. And so I wrote this song called It's Your War Now, Mrs. Bly.
And that would also kind of tie in with, you have a song called Vote, the referendum and people who didn't vote.
Absolutely. So, and this is the song that got Pete interested in my music, was first song that he started playing of mine. Little did I know, I had accidentally written a folk song because I was so influenced by, you know, Peter, Paul, and Mary and that kind of style. And I didn't really know Pete Seeger's style, but I wrote a song, Vote, and basically is saying we all need to participate. The chorus is, vote, get your butt in the booth and pull down the lever. Vote for worse or for better, okay? All right. We're all going to get involved, and we're going to do the best we can with what we got, and we're going to live the consequences of our decisions, whether we vote or not vote.
All right, so what we'll do now, we're going to play, we'll go to Vote first, and then we'll play Waist Deep in the Big Muddy, and It's Your War Now.
When politicians come to town and kiss babies till their noses turn brown, you can bet your bottom dollar they want your vote. So speak your mind, cause believe it or not, this world has become a big melting pot. It's easy to get yourself lost in the lot, cause the world's made up of all kinds of people, so vote. Don't you never mind the weather, get your butt in the booth and pull down the lever, vote. For worse or for better, let your voice be heard. We've got fuzzy-headed, peace-loving, carrot-chomping farmer boys, skin-headed, neo-Nazi face, fashion paranoids, fat cats sitting back, scoffing at the tabloids, yep. And there's cross-burning, homophobic, church-going family types, flag-burning, anti-war, give the poor more types, out-of-school, know-it-all, cliff-claving prototypes. The world's made up of all kinds of people, so vote. Don't you never mind the weather, get your butt in the booth and pull down the lever, vote. For worse or for better, let your voice be heard. Got men-hating, aggravating, right-wing feminists, pro-life clinic burning, gospel-preaching terrorists, city-dwelling unemployed folks who can't stand it no more. Sky-choking, river-killing, free-market advocates, tree-loving, owl-hugging, pro-environmentalists, urban folk high on dope, raising up the clenched fist. The world's made up of all kinds of people, so vote. Don't you never mind the weather, get your butt in the booth and pull down the lever, vote. For worse or for better, let your voice be heard. Josh lives up on the mountain, grows his own food, drinks from Mother Nature's fountain, and only gets down into town around once a week. And all the pretty young gals from the nearby high school stop by his farm cause they think he's so cool, chewing on wheatgrass, spitting out philosophy. He says, looking at life cosmologically, we're all cells in the body of the Almighty, and with godlike nature, we create our own reality. Down here on Earth, that's a different ball of wax. We gotta eat, pay all kinds of taxes, and form governments that have laws to pass. Cause the world's made up of all kinds of people, so vote. Don't you never mind the weather, get your butt in the booth and pull down the lever, vote. For worse or for better, vote.
Hey, come on, everybody, vote!
Don't you never mind the weather, get your butt in the booth and pull down the lever, vote. Worse off or better, let your voice be heard.
It was back in 1992. I was a member of a good platoon. We were on maneuvers in Louisiana one night by the light of the moon. The captain told us to ford a river. That's when it all begun. We were knee-deep in the big muddy. The big fool says to push on. The sergeant said, "Sir, are you sure this is the best way back to the base?" "Come on, sergeant, I forded this river a mile above this place. It will be soggy, but keep on slogging, we'll soon be on dry ground." But we were waist deep in the big muddy. The big fool says to push on. The sergeant said, "Sir, with all this equipment, no man will be able to swim." "Sergeant, don't be a nervous nilly," the captain said to him. "All we need is determination. Men, follow me, I'll lead on." We were neck deep in the big muddy. The big fool says to push on. All at once, the moon clouded over, and we heard a gurgling cry. A few seconds later, the captain's helmet slowly floated by. The sergeant hollered, "Turn around, men! I'm in charge here from now on." And we just made it out of the big muddy with the captain dead and gone. Well, we stripped and dived and found his body stuck in the old quicksand. He did not know that the water was deeper than the place he'd once before been. Another stream had joined the big muddy a half mile from where we had gone. And we were lucky to escape from the big muddy when the big fool said to push on. I'm not gonna point any moral, I'll leave that for yourself. 'Cause maybe you're still walking, you're still talking, you'd like to keep your health. But every time I read the paper, the same old feeling comes on. We're waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep, neck deep, soon a tall man will be over his head. Waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Sadness in the mirror and you sigh. What once were minor wrinkles are now cavernous divides and black bags of mass every night beneath your eyes. It's not a pretty picture that you face, Mrs. Bly. What you face is the fact that mother's children die in a war with no clear purpose, in a war that's gone awry, that you zealously supported and dragged your friends along. Now they look to you for answers and they fear you were wrong. You battle for your image
as truth becomes your foe. For without you, there'd have been no war. Now people want to know, will you yield to truth or renew the battle cry? Face it, it's your war now, Mrs. Bly. You look distinguished in black, you must confess. You'll be speaking at the funeral, so you must look your best. Will you tell of worthy causes? Will you try to justify why you campaigned for the candidate who sent your son to die? You battle for your image as truth becomes your foe. For without you, there'd have been no war. Now people want to know, will you yield the truth or renew the battle cry? Face it, it's your war now, Mrs. Bly. It's your war now. Yes, it is your war. The politicians claim you can't blame them anymore. It's your war now. Yes, it is your war. When you bought the lies they sold you, you bought yourself a war. It's your war, Mrs. Bly. It's your war. You never told your son he had to go and fight, but you always made it clear to him that you are always right. How you blasted all the activists who stood against all war and said no man of honor would not wear the uniform. You were proud when he enlisted, as proud as any mom. Now zip your black dress and put more makeup on till you cover up your blemishes so you won't have to see. The cause of your son's death lies within your vanity. You battle for your image as truth becomes your foe. For without you, there'd have been no war. Now people want to know, will you yield to truth or renew the battle cry? Face it, it's your war now, Mrs. Bly.